Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie has her microphone muted. She needs to undo that. To start
Hi, everybody. Basics. Even I, friends, forget to unmute my microphone when I'm supposed to be talking. We are all human beings, aren't we? Thank you, Anya. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show with my microphone unmuted here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined in the production booth by my good friend, Anya Esther. Lots to talk about today, and I kind of wanted to just jump right into it. One of the things that, listen, I think regardless of the topic of the day or the politics of the thing, when elected officials, political leaders, university leaders, governmental leaders, any of us get up and say things, they need to sound in the truth. They need to sound in some sort of facts. We want to be able to actually rely upon what a newscaster is saying. We want to know when someone's giving us opinions. I do an opinion show. I research things. I always try to get it exactly right. I am open to correction when I get it wrong. I will correct myself when I can. But I think all of us value and want people to tell us things that are true and that can be verified and have factual bases. And what we especially don't want people to do is to say one thing when we're under the threat of perjury or legal sanction, and then, you know, a couple months later, say exactly the opposite when we're not sworn and under oath. And, you know, we were talking about a Ron Johnson interview that happened on Monday yesterday, where he asserted that Democratic states and Democratic Party folks have submitted slates of fake electors. And he was called on it by the reporter that was interviewing him, and he could not provide any examples. And then kind of bristled at the fact that she had asked him to, you know, substantiate his pretty incredible claim. And so, you know, as the internet and all the social media platforms continue to be part of our day-to-day lives and how we consume information, each and every one of us, given that we can't take what people say at face value, deserve the fact check. We deserve to know how to do that ourselves. And one of the things that I always strive and hope to do on this show is to provide those fact checks, especially when they're, you know, a click away. And so what I wanted to turn to today was what Rudy Giuliani said coming out of a really important court hearing in the defamation case brought by two regular ladies in Georgia who were just showing up and doing their jobs and all of a sudden found their names and faces all over one particular leaning media atmosphere, right? And they got death threats and they've had to move and their lives have been turned upside down. And it turns out that the things that were said about them by Mr. Giuliani and others were simply false. And so he's facing multiple millions of dollars in damages claimed by these women. And let's just listen to what Mr. Giuliani had to say. This is going to be cut one, Anya. Yesterday, as he was leaving court, this is in the damages phase of Mr. Giuliani's defamation trial.
Whatever happened to them, which is, it's unfortunate if other people overreacted, but everything I said about them is true.
Do you regret what you did to Ruby?
Of course Fenton? I don't regret. I told the truth. They were engaged in changing votes.
There's no proof of that.
Oh, you're damn right there is. Stay tuned. Whatever.
I should say, too, his lawyer is physically grabbing Giuliani and trying to get him away from the mics in this clip. It doesn't come through in the audio, but they're trying to get this guy away from saying this.
Stop talking. Let's. I want to listen to it again. Okay.
What happened to them, which is, it's unfortunate if other people overreact, but everything I said about them is true.
Do you regret what you did to Ruby?
Of course I don't regret. I told the truth. They were engaged in changing votes.
There's no proof of that.
Oh, you're damn right there is. Stay tuned.
Okay. The court hearing that he was had just come out of was in the United States District Court for the District of Columbia, so the DC court, where he has been accused of defamation. And you may recall that months ago, in July, I'd only been on the air for a month, I told you, oh my gosh, Rudy admitted in this case that he lied about these women. And now he's saying, no, I told the truth. And boy, it's unfortunate that when I claimed on every news outlet that would listen and outside the Four Seasons landscaping business that these women were changing votes, stealing votes, which we all as Americans would condemn. How dare you steal my vote? How dare you change my vote? That is a criminal act. Oh, how unfortunate is it that these women were subjected to death threats and became afraid for their lives for just doing their jobs. You're damn right I did. I told the truth. No, Mr. Giuliani. On July 26th, 2023, in this very litigation, here is what you, sir, you, Mr. Giuliani, admitted in a sworn court filing. That the statements you made about these women are defamatory, meaning it harms their reputation and here led to real true harm. They've had to move. They've been subjected to death threats. He admitted these were defamatory statements. He admitted that those statements, quote, these actionable factual statements were false. Again, this is Mr. Giuliani in the court case that he just walked out of and said everything that he said was true. Here's what he said on July 25th. The factual statements were false, end quote. You lie, sir. You lied then, you're lying now, and the only time you've told the truth is when you are under penalty of perjury. In that same admission by Mr. Giuliani on July 25th of this year, he said that the factual elements of defamation regarding plaintiff's claim for intentional infliction of emotional distress and other related tort claims, I do not contest. He's saying, I lied, and I did so intentionally, and I caused these women harm. He admits this when sworn and under oath on July 25th, and yesterday he comes out and lies again. I hope he gets sued again. Now, the judge presiding in this case, thanks to all you tweeters and commenters, you can always comment and join me, 844-967-2789. Yes, the judge in this case today scolded Giuliani and said, as I just did now, your statements could support another separate defamation claim. I don't care what the politics are. It should not be permissible for people to lie like this, so brazenly. I can't emphasize this enough. July 25th, 2023, Rudy Giuliani says that the factual statements about Ms. Freeman and Ms. Moss, quote, were false, end quote, and that I do not contest the factual elements of liability regarding plaintiff's claim for intentional infliction of emotional distress and other related tort claims. I think we can all agree that lying is bad. Here's what I want. Here's what I think we all want. Tell us the truth. When asked to provide evidence, admit if you don't have it. We sometimes engage in speculation when we're concerned about the activities of political leaders and elected officials. That happens, but just say so. We're holding a hearing because we really don't have evidence and we think the hearing might get us evidence. You can say that. But when you repeatedly lie over and over and over again, when do we, regardless of the party that we may on most days affiliate with, say enough? I will not extend you the benefit of my doubt anymore, because truth-telling matters. I think it matters to all of us. And Rudy Giuliani, you are a lying clown, despicable, with a pending disbarment. He's no longer considered fit to practice law. I mean, there's a reason his lawyers are like, stop talking, because you're going to get sued again. When we come back, I'm going to move on. But man, shouldn't we demand of our political leaders that they tell the truth and that they support their claims and assertions with facts and evidence? That is the American way. And I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. I got a great guest coming up. Molly Dubin, of the Milwaukee Jewish Museum is going to be joining me at the bottom of the hour to talk about a fabulous exhibit that they've got that's running until the end of the year. I got a few more tidbits from the news to share with you when we come back here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Somebody wants to tweet at Giuliani that little Cher classic, if I could turn back time and take back all those words that I said that have hurt you. Oh boy, would that be appropriate. But apparently, I think most of us go through the world not wanting to hurt one another, not wanting to harm our neighbors, not wanting to hurt people who show up and just do their job. Rudy Giuliani wants to hurt these women and hurt them again and again and again. That's not a value I share. But I promised you I would move on, so I will do so. And I think, you know, we're having a debate today in our state about DEI programs in the University of Wisconsin system. And I think eventually we'll unpack exactly what it is that Robin Voss is requiring. But I think all of us, again, would agree that we want to ensure that students and professors enjoy freedom of speech, freedom of academic research, but that we need to foster environments where all are welcome. And I'm going to talk about speech on campus. I'm going to talk about that tomorrow because that has been quite a distorted and problematic debate. But one of the things that I think, again, binds us together is that I don't assume that my life's experiences are shared by other people. Right? I'm just one little dot. I've only experienced what my minutes on this rock hurtling through the universe has been. And so in general, I try not to speak for people, especially those who have wildly different lived experiences than I do. Black folks, trans folks, Jewish folks, Muslim folks. And I think when other people proclaim to speak for groups that they have zero lived experience regarding, again, some warning flags go up there for me. And we had a pretty stark example of this happening just yesterday. Anya, we're going to listen to Donald Trump Jr. speaking about what he thinks would be better for trans folks and black folks.
Same student, and you took away, skin color, sexual orientation, you know, trans, you know, gender, you know, status, whatever the heck that may be. If you took that away and you compared the scores of Asians and or whites relative to any of the other sort of, let's call them, you know, checkbox, woke status symbols today of the radical left, and you put them head to head, it's shocking. Who is able to get into Harvard and who would be unilaterally deterred or just rejected entirely. That has gone on. And if you can check off one or preferably more of those woke boxes, you don't have to actually be a great academic student. You don't have to have all sorts of extracurriculars. You don't have to have perfect boards or grades. We'll come up with a way to figure out why you should be there because diversity is our strength there.
You can plagiarize your PhD dissertation and still become president of Harvard. What a great place to live.
Yeah, no, imagine she was any other Democrat. I believe she's gay. You know, not that that matters. And she's obviously African American. But if she was a straight white male, again, does anyone with a straight face, could they tell me they even think there's a snowball's chance in hell that she would be able to keep her job and the entire board of Harvard, despite the pressure from some of the biggest, most esteemed alumni there? You think there's even a chance? Not for one second.
There's a lot there, to say the very least. I'll take up more of it tomorrow. But Donald Trump Jr. is neither transgender nor black. And Donald Trump Jr. Didn't need to be a super achiever either to get into schools. And his statements sort of bring to mind for me this baseline. Simply because you haven't experienced something doesn't mean that someone else hasn't, right? And the presumption of that my lived experience is that of everyone else's is sort of the very definition of speaking from a privileged place. And he's not only privileged because he's male and white, he's going to inherit billions of dollars. So, again, we'll get into a lot of the detail there, including the claims of plagiarism tomorrow. I'll do that. But I just, this idea that being welcoming to all kinds of people and ensuring that if you're a black person on campus or you're a gay black female or a transgendered person, that you don't feel that you're the only one, that that's a supportive environment so that you can learn and express yourselves just like everybody else is in a safe environment. That's not a problem. That's not something for us to be worried about. And there's a ream of factual inaccuracies there. There's no unilateral decision-making in university admissions. There never has been, except if you're a donor. When he says esteemed alumni, he means alumni that write really big checks. Like, the only people that get into universities without having to meet minimum criteria are the children of donors. So I would respectfully say, if you want to move to a meritocracy, then stop with legacy admissions and stop taking donor kids. Scrub everybody's application so you can't tell who they are. But that's not the way it works. So I like to live in reality, right? Where students should feel that they can be safe on campus to express themselves, to engage in debates, sometimes to say things that are wrong. Professors should be able to do that too. We're going to get into this, I think, artificial distinction between speech at a certain level, in a certain intensity, in a certain volume and conduct. Because I think that in many ways, shapes, and forms is, in a university setting especially, a bit of a false distinction. Jim from Appleton says, again, the First Amendment has a specific prohibition against spreading dangerous falsehoods. Yeah. And there are those that traffic in them all the time. Again, I think most of us, if we're at university, want the same things. When we come back, I'm going to be really excited to be joined by Molly Dubin. Let's embrace the Festival of Lights that is right now. Happy Hanukkah, everybody. We're going to be talking to Molly about a great installation at the Milwaukee Jewish Museum. Keep it locked, everybody. Don't worry, there'll be more politics on the back end. Join our convo, 844-967-2789. Tell you I was wrong. I know that I was blind. And don't anybody
tell. You must understand the touch of your hand makes my pulse react.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can join me, Anya, and my new guest, Molly Dubin, 844-967-2789. Welcome, Molly. Happy Hanukkah to you. How are you doing today?
Well, thank you, Maggie. I am well, and happy Hanukkah to you and to those who are partaking of the celebration and Festival of Lights.
I bought my first menorah this year simply as a show of solidarity. It is up in the front window. I really hope that everyone can find their way. If you're not familiar with Hanukkah and what it celebrates, one, you can go listen to my show last week where Anya explained it very well.
I did my best.
You did fantastically, and in the shortest amount of time I've ever heard Hanukkah broken down.
Thank you.
But if you don't know about it, go again. You know, you don't have to go to the books anymore, right? You can go to the Google and read things. Anti-Defamation League has a ton. Go check it out. Educate yourself. It's a wonderful celebration of many things that I think Americans identify with: resilience and fortitude and strength and togetherness and community. So with Absolutely. All of that.
Yeah. And bringing light in the darkness, illuminating in challenging times, coming together to do that is really what's at the heart of the holiday. And that's something I think we can all get behind right now.
Absolutely. Especially here in Wisconsin, when it is so dark and so cold.
Exactly.
we all need literally
lighting the darkness.
Yes. Well, again, my thanks, Molly, for being here. First of all, tell everybody where the Milwaukee Jewish Museum is and your hours and what sort of exhibits you all have there. And is it just for Jewish people? Let's start with the basics.
All of those things. We are for everyone. We of course, are a Jewish museum. We're located just off of downtown. We're at 1360 North Prospect Avenue, so kind of right on the corner of Prospect and Ogden. And we have, we've been around for a number of years, but that said, a number of people, walk past us constantly on the east side, and they'll stop in and say, I passed this building so many times and I've never come in to see what it's all about. And they're really quite taken by everything that's here, from our permanent exhibit where we explore and tell the story of the Jews of southeastern Wisconsin, to our changing exhibits, which we do multiple a year, many of which really tie into issues of social justice and giving voice to those who are not given the opportunity to really be recognized, and really exploring issues of immigration is kind of evergreen to us, and really looking at a number of things that I think are universal, but through a Jewish lens. So yes, we have the permanent Jewish exhibit. It's a great opportunity for our community to come in and to look at their own history, because we are really literally evolved from history artifacts that come from our community, but also to really come in and learn about the Jewish culture and learn about, you know, the similarities in so many of the traditions, because there are truly so many ties that bind, that thread us, which is kind of a nice segue to our current exhibit.
Perfectly done. You should do professional radio, Molly.
Well, thank you.
I love it. Tell us, the name of the exhibit is Women Pulling at the Threads of Social Discourse.
It is. It is. And it's up through just the end of the year. So I'm happy to talk about it and for people to come in. And I didn't mention our hours, which you asked me about. And so that's Monday through Thursday, 10 to 5, Friday from 10 to 3, and Sundays from noon to 4. So some opportunities to come in the next few weeks to really take in this incredible exhibit, which looks at, I would say, at the heart of everything, intersectionality. You know, these are issues that are impacting women, have impacted them historically, continue to impact them. In many instances, we're looking at the celebration of rights within a, you know, contemporary period of seeing some of those rights taken away. So the idea of being able to shine a light on this discipline of the fiber arts and women working in the field, and really kind of debunking some of the narratives that surround it, is a great opportunity, along with shining a light on some incredibly talented artists from around the country and from our own community.
It's such an exciting moment. I am a musician, but one of the things that I like love and respect so much of the visual arts is speaking through silence in the chosen medium of the artist, and how powerful and transformative and moving that can be, how it speaks to people in different ways. Because so many of the things, as I was reading about the exhibit, that I think are through lines or threads that many folks, you don't have to be female or an immigrant,
absolutely,
or Jewish, there's commonalities there that I think people will find resonance with, that it is so empowering and inspiring in all kinds of different ways. When a lot of folks hear the words intersection or intersectionality, right, it becomes this buzzword, but none of us walk around as just one thing.
Absolutely. It's so layered. It's so layered. And I think, you know, historically that's the case, but certainly, you know, in our world today, there's not just one issue or one, you know, concept that is impacting people. It's multiple in many cases, and layered and complex. So being able to give visual voice to so many of those issues is an incredible opportunity. As you aptly said, so often visual arts are able to kind of transcend some of the barriers that may be in place to engaging, you know, with thoughts, ideologies, beliefs. You know, sometimes writing isn't, you know, it can be a bit of a barrier, whether it's language or just, you know, difference of thoughts. There's something about, you know, the visualness that just speaks so universally on such a powerful level.
Well, and I think, go ahead, Molly, I'm sorry.
I was going to say too, you know, I mentioned when we began talking that, you know, what we're really doing is debunking some of the, you know, some of the narratives surrounding the discipline, which of course, you know, are largely shaped by patriarchal systems and narratives. The idea that fiber arts, you know, working with fiber with thread is, you know, kind of easy women's work, you know, and that so often, really, it's been kind of relegated to a lower, you know, movement, considered more of a craft. It hasn't really been put on par, which has begun to change in the last many years, which is fantastic. That's begun to evolve. But, you know, for so long, it really wasn't put on par with, you know, mediums like sculpture or painting. And I think that's part of the power of this exhibit, is that there's this very kind of comforting, you know, engaging, welcoming, you know, aspect of textile and thread and fiber. So you're kind of lulled into it, but then that's juxtaposed with this exploration of incredibly vital and sometimes jarring issues, which I think helps to, you know, really bring home the point.
Well, and isn't that something that, you know, every single one of us here in the United States have been faced with stereotypes and pigeonholing of parts of our identity, and yes, breaking through that and showing up as our full and complete selves with our own individual complexities, but also, pardon the pun here, the fabric of our complexities, yes, in the different groups to which we subscribe or are born into, is something that I think all of us yearn for in different ways and express at different points in our lives. No one wants to be put in their place or told what you're all about. And certainly women, and particularly women in this moment, trying to say very loudly, but also in quiet mediums and ways, we deserve the same freedoms and rights that everyone else in society does. Yeah, we're not their darning socks anymore. And if somebody hasn't sat down and tried to follow a pattern or create a beautiful piece of art in the textile realm, that is some hard, hard, challenging, difficult, patience trying work. And I've always been the one that's like cheating off of a pattern, right? I'm not creating it, again, pardon the pun, out of whole cloth, right? Tell us a little bit. I know it's a modern art project. Tell us a little bit about where this exhibit began.
Sure.
It's got such an interesting background.
Well, you know, we here at the Jewish Museum Milwaukee are, as I mentioned earlier, kind of really devoted to looking at issues of social justice. And some of the other, you know, concepts we really look to engage with are bridging the past to the present and identifying contemporary parallels. And I'm often, you know, looking on, you know, whether that's on the internet or different, you know, resources to see some of the exciting things are out there. And I was lucky enough, really kind of, you know, through chance, to stumble upon, through a connection with some artists who I wound up were involved with this project, which began in Florida, in Miami. And I reached out to Melanie, who is the founder of an organization called CAMP. The acronym stands for Contemporary Art Modern Project. And she herself began as a fiber artist. And this really began in 2019 and has evolved. And there have been different kind of themes associated with it, depending on, you know, what's going on in our society or what we feel like really needs to come to the forefront. And it has taken on different incarnations, whether that's, you know, in Florida or then having a different version in Connecticut that wound up engaging artists from that community and then are working together to stage this, you know, this version here and putting out a call to Midwest artists. So being able to add that sensibility, and that's a really another, you know, interesting component, is looking at the level of comfort or discomfort for women to address certain issues, depending on where they are in the country, particularly those who, you know, are in Miami. A number of them are immigrants or have family who are immigrants, you know, and may have originally been from places in Central or South America where they, you know, literally were fleeing, you know, violent regimes, and there may be repercussion. So it was really interesting to look at that as another kind of layer of this, in terms of, do women feel like they can speak up And how much more do we maybe need to pay attention when they are not and they're silenced and need to recognize that that is happening and amplify that even more, the issues that are being dealt with.
Well, congratulations, Molly, on bringing something that is, I think, provides such an open potential to people to experience in such a different, I think for most people, way, the stories of others. And certainly in Wisconsin, we have, again, pardon the pun, a rich tapestry the literal translation of family history and some of the work of Hmong communities in Wisconsin and in the region to how it's expressed in traditional quilting in Wisconsin. I'm so happy. Congratulations on such a wonderful exhibit.
Thank you. I can only take credit for putting it up. It's really the artists who are the activists and the incredibly talented individuals who have brought these extraordinary works and conversations to life.
Go check it out. Milwaukee Jewish Museum. My thanks to Molly Dubin. Happy Festival of Lights to you. Shalom.
Thank you, Meg. You too.
Corner of Jackson and Ogden. Don't miss it. It's around until the end of the year. We're going to be back in a few minutes on the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Network. Are we out already?
No, we're on the corner of Prospect and Ogden, right?
Corner of Prospect and Ogden. Thank you so much. I want to be sure we get the exact location. And you can always check it out on Sundays from noon to 4.
You can.
Thanks again, Molly.
Take care. Thank you.
My thanks to Molly Dubin of the Milwaukee Jewish Museum. You can check out Women Pulling at the Threads of Social Discourse now until the end of the year. They're on the corner of, tell everybody again, Prospect.
They're on Prospect and Ogden.
I love seeing all the different exhibits as they come in because on the side of the building, they're always promoed. It's super, I guarantee it. If you have been in Milwaukee, anywhere on the east side, you have driven past the Jewish Museum and looked at one of their beautiful advertisements, one of their traveling exhibits. Go check it out. I sure will be doing so. Now, yesterday, I promised to finish up some of the examples about red states telling blue cities what to do. Yesterday, we talked about Florida, DeSantis removing two duly elected DAs from Democratic counties. We talked about Louisiana, where just New Orleans is getting some special treatment. Nowhere else in Louisiana. Ohio, they've now prohibited local governments from enacting gun safety regulations and tobacco safety regulations. To Texas and its Death Star, Texas government has taken over only Houston school district. This just happened in Houston. They've only removed the elections commissioner in Harris County, which is where Houston is, and no other county's election commissioners. It's interesting how, you know, it seems to be just the democratically leaning cities, which, again, I have to say, don't we all think that we should be treated similarly and fairly? And yet that doesn't seem to be a principle that adheres in certain red-controlled states. Probably one of the most extraordinary and extreme examples of this is in the state of Mississippi, where the Republican-controlled state government has set up an entire different criminal justice judicial district for only one city in Mississippi, Jackson. And instead of the people in Jackson being able to elect their own district attorneys and judges, the state government now tells the people of Jackson who their district attorneys and judges will be. They are appointed. Think about that. If suddenly the place that you live, you don't get to pick your election commissioner. You don't get to decide the funding or how your government, your local government's going to budget. You don't get to have your selected via election district attorneys and judges. No. We're just going to treat you differently from everyone else in your state. Why? Because we say so. Doesn't sound like the principles of equality and fairness that we all subscribe to. It's happening in Tennessee. It's happening in Missouri. And it certainly has happened in Wisconsin. I don't know about you. Isn't it supposed to be what's good for the goose is good for the gander? We believe in fairness. This isn't fair. And I don't care what excuses you put around it. It's not fair. We have a right to self-governance, except apparently if you're in Jackson, Mississippi. Right? That Republican or Democratic, who cares? We self-govern here. We pick our local officials. We have our local officials' budget. If we don't like their budgets, we elect new ones. The state's not supposed to be telling us how to run our city governments. I also promised you that I would talk about this very bizarre op-ed that popped out at the Washington Post, written by the editorial board on November 22nd. Not going to read all of it. I'm going to read some of the more eyebrow-raising portions of it. Again, the editorial board of the Washington Post. And it's entitled, "If Attitudes Don't Shift, a Political Dating Mismatch Will Threaten Marriage." Even the headline to me is a little bit ick-inducing. Third paragraph, it says, "A growing number of young women are discovering they can't find suitable male partners. And the problem with political polarization is that it has effects well beyond the political realm, and these can be difficult to anticipate. One example is the collapse of American marriage." And then the line about young women are discovering they can't find suitable male partners. As if it's the young women's problem. As if you're not married, it's not valuable. Again, I ask you about equity and fairness and shared responsibility. Yes, we have individual responsibility, but we also deeply care about our neighbors and our community together. We have shared responsibility. Why is it written like this is on the women? It goes on. "Men are increasingly struggling with or suffering from higher unemployment. Unemployment's at its lowest level in years, in like a decade. It's 3.7%. And generally speaking, women have higher unemployment levels than men do. What are they talking about? Suffering from more drug addiction and deaths of despair and generally less purpose and direction in their lives. Women don't suffer from depression and despair. Women aren't paid equally for their work, for the same work." It's strange. I read it and I went, who greenlit this? And they cite to a whole bunch of studies. Most of the studies come from these far right think tanks that oppose things like no fault divorce. No fault divorce was created in the 1960s. So that a woman who is getting beaten by her husband could go into court and not talk about the abuse and could just get a divorce? Yeah, they're citing statistics from right-leaning organizations that oppose no-fault divorce. They're citing statistics from the American Enterprise Institute. What happened to the Washington Post editorial board? Did they just... It's strange. So... I raise that as an example because you can't always look at the source and go, oh, well, that's left, that's right, that's Democratic, that's Republican. That's the Washington Post. Most folks will be, oh, that's left-leaning. Not on November 22nd, propagating a bunch of propaganda that doesn't implicitly treat men and women equally. That's it from the Maggie Dawn Show. I'll be back tomorrow. We'll be talking about speech on campus. You're not going to want to miss it. See y'all tomorrow.